I have done work for clients, software companies that are $100, $200, $300 million a year in sales, and I've done work for, you know, companies that almost have no software sales, an example of the software industries that I've worked in. The principles have all pretty much been the same, but had I dared go after a client, you know, wants to sell $30 million next year in international markets, and I haven't been through the steps of learning really what it takes and learning how to test and learning how to avoid the mistakes and so on, you're risking your reputation and you're risking other people's livelihood.
Hi, this is Michael Senoff. Thanks for checking out this recording. You are lucky to be an HMA-trained consultant because what I'm about to share with you can change the way you run your marketing practice forever. I'm excited to introduce to you another exclusive interview for the HMA Consultants with Christian Cares. He's the founder and president of Cares Cares Consulting. Christian Cares is only 30 years old and runs a multi-million dollar consulting firm. You're about to be a fly on the wall as I dig out all of his consulting secrets. This interview is 90 minutes. It's the story you need to hear because it can save you from making many mistakes in your consulting practice. You're about to learn how Christian went from working as a backroom stock boy making minimum wage to being the CEO of his own international consulting firm. You'll hear his opinions on what it takes to make it in the consulting business. You'll learn how he used his marketing skills to buy ownership and control of two successful money-making businesses. You'll learn how he used reverse engineering to get a write-up in Forbes magazine. And finally, you'll learn how to get the driving reasons why a potential client wants help with his business to determine if you should work with him. Enjoy. When you emailed me and you had questions about Richard's program, when you said you're doing a couple million a year, I'm like, I got to talk to that guy. Sure. So where are you in Canada?
I'm in Calgary, Canada.
You're in Calgary, okay. So how old are you?
I'm 30 years old.
Are you entrepreneurial? Is this your own company you started?
Yeah, it is. The story happened a long time ago, actually, when I was working, putting myself to university for a retail company, Gap Incorporated. Basically a pusher of stock, you know, in the back room, moving stuff around. And I came up with a concept of re-engineering part of the back room on the way the back room operates, because the amount of hours that a retail store spends in non-sell activities typically is very, very high. And although they're a necessary evil, they don't generate revenue for business. Mm-hmm. And I just thought there was a better way. So I paid for myself to go to one of the distribution centers out east to see how they actually pack the boxes up, that in return think of the ways that we could unpack them on the receipt end that would be more effective now. So when they put the stuff together, when they select items and merchandise for store, how they package it up, what process it goes through, and how many people, or how the assembly line actually works on the distribution center side.
Where was the distribution center?
It was a distribution center out by Toronto.
And did they welcome you to come out there and check it out?
I went as a holiday, but I paid my own way. They were more than happy to show me around, show me how it worked, and I came back and I said, you know what, there's a better way to do this. And I basically reverse engineered the process. I said, we should do this in assembly line style. We should do this in a format that allows us to work rapidly and effectively. We should put things at waist height versus working all over the board in a back room, and far more organized and coordinated. Well, within a short period of time, a whole bunch of people that were in the back rooms in the city in Calgary were relocated to work on the floor and do more productive activities that generate revenue. We started saving a lot of money, and it caught the attention of some senior people in San Francisco.
All right, so you have this idea. You fly yourself out there to go check out how they do it. You were just an employee at that time. What did you say to your manager?
I made a deal. I said, if I could reduce the number of hours in the back room, would you pay me more?
What did they say?
Sure. They didn't believe it was that possible. And I said, would you pay me 25 cents for every dollar that you're paying everybody else?
Now, had you been exposed to Abraham already?
Not at all. It just made sense to me to make money. Stock person, you don't make a whole lot of money. You make $7-$8 an hour, right? They figured I'd save them maybe one person in the back room. And
did you get it in writing?
Yeah, I did.
Really? From who?
From the store manager. They had the discretion. 25 cents per raise per hour wasn't that ridiculous of an expectation. And that's what the assumption was. But in the back room, the store that I was in had six people. We went down to two. All of a sudden, things started changing. And then I said, I could do this at all the stores and just simply manage a small team. And progressively, I got really good at over a period of 3 or 4 months. They were obviously some of the most effective in Canada, and they caught the attention in the U.S. from San Francisco. So I was invited to San Francisco to come talk about what I had done, and they basically put together a specialized team to launch this project across key stores, flagship stores, major locations across the U.S. and Canada. So I was involved in that project for about 2 years. I stopped going to university at the time.
Did they give you your raise?
A slight raise.
Okay.
I wasn't doing too bad at the time because basically I was making 25 cents for a whole bunch of people at the time. So I was making the equivalent of what a store manager was making with a stock person's title, which is not a lot in the retail industry, to be quite honest. So I worked at that project for a couple of years. It was highly publicized. You can read about articles in Forbes magazine on how the Gap had gone through this backroom reengineering, and I had my picture splattered here and there. But when the project really was running on its own, another consulting firm was hired to really take this on further. They hired Anderson Consulting at the time, as it was known, to use their expertise to take it further and to do analysis and timestamp dating for productivity and so on, to really get down to the granular level. And I learned a huge amount of information at that point.
Did you work hand-in-hand with them?
Hand-in-hand, yes, correct.
So you did learn a lot from these guys?
Oh, I learned massive amounts because I had basically just taken a concept in a really rough sketch and implemented, taken the action to do it. But these guys really had the ability to go down and measure productivity, measure functional task analysis, put cameras on people to determine optimum ways of positioning things. There's a huge amount of knowledge base in these large companies that really you can't take for granted. After working on that project, the project ended, and it basically was on autopilot. It was very easy for the stores to continue to implement. It was taped on videos and, you know, highly replicatable across the board of the organization. There wasn't really a lot of places to go. I didn't really want to move to San Francisco because of the cost of living, and the quality of life here where I am is quite good. So I decided that it was time to find something else. So I took a 6-month project with Anderson the Consulting.
How did you get the job with Anderson?
Basically, they knew that I couldn't stay at the retail level anymore.
So they recruited you?
So they recruited me to work for them. However, after about 6 months, you travel a lot. I had been traveling a ton already with, you know, I'm going to cool places and all, but still traveling. Recently married, so I decided that it'd be best to try my hand at something else. And a bit of comfort and perhaps a bit of ignorance, you decide to go out on your own at that point, right?
Right.
And in looking back in retrospect or in the marketplace, you know, I went to work for other retail companies locally to see if I can help them out. I started realizing you can have a fair impact with operations and administrative functions within an organization, but at the end of the day, the stuff that really matters, the stuff that people are willing to pay you the big bucks for, have to do with generating revenue, with generating sales. And there's very few people out there, I think, or I believe, that really like to roll up their sleeves and actually get out there and sell stuff and make money in the process. There's lots of strategists. I saw lots of people who had great ideas, but when it actually came down to doing it, it becomes a lot of theory. At that point, I started becoming really interested in, well, how do you sell, and is there a process to selling? And the companies I started working or approaching, I made it more on that level as, can I sell for you? You know, I'll do it on a straight commission basis.
But had you studied the Brian Tracy and the Zig Ziglar and any of that stuff?
No, I had no idea those people existed actually at that point. I became savvier about learning from other people a couple of years later, but at first, you know, really, really hard driving and learning and going through, but figuring that there was a better way. I was very good at documenting what I was doing, determining, okay, here's what I call a company for. And my thoughts were, I'm not going to sell for one company. I'm going to sell for 3 or 4 or 5 companies at a time. And I would document the process of, you know, how do I call them? What do I say? How does it work? Is there a better way? Can I find something else to say? Keep a log of objections that I would consistently get when I called companies to do it. And then across the process, I landed a customer who ended up having a very, very good customer base.
You said, okay, I'm going to do my own consulting and try and get my own clients.
Right.
How did you start the process from when you first started calling on clients? Who were you calling on? Who was your market? And take me through that process.
My initial thoughts were to help retail companies and to help them do admin operation type stuff. They call them, and some would be interested, and I'd do a project for a month here, 2 months there, and a lot of these stores are really small.
How would you charge?
I would charge a monthly fee, or I would charge a project fee. I would basically be able to go into a back room of a store, a retail store, and having been experienced being exposed to so many types and sizes, I could quickly see that, you know, there's major inefficiencies here and there, and that'd probably take me, and I'd eyeball stuff, taking a month to clean it up, and we need to buy a few things here and there, or 2 months, and then to be able to document it, put some policies and procedures in place for the back room. I'd do it kind of winging at mistakes in the process.
But what kind of mistakes did you make?
undercharging, not understanding that you really have to get commitment from the customer. They have to be involved in the process. You can't just really come in on the outside and roll your sleeves up and do it and then expect them to continue doing it or to see the benefits without them having actually participated in the process.
All right, so give me an example of a particular client that you made that mistake with. What happened?
A mistake, for example, where in reengineering a back room, part of the operations and the policies and procedures, there might be a best practice that's known in the industry that you might just say, this is what you guys need to be doing, and you basically document it for them, and now you ask them to start doing it. But without having them involved in understanding exactly what it takes, they won't do it. So, for example, in managing shipping and receiving, there should be certain levels of logs and audit trails that you manage. The shipping and receiving and logistics industry is notorious for being fairly poor in the way they perform their services. And if you don't document things in certain ways and you aren't consistent, it makes it very hard to claim things. Well, you put a policy and procedure, you have a walkthrough, they just see it as an onerous task. You know that if they follow those procedures, they're going to save themselves a lot of money and they're going to see the benefit of what you do. But unless they understand that, it doesn't matter. So I had a customer where I told them, you know, this is, you're getting a lot of broken and damaged goods. This is the process you have to go through consistently to ensure that you're protected and that you can recover some of that. And this is part of what you've paid me for. And then, of course, things would show up broken and damaged. And because they really didn't understand why I'd put that process in place and how to follow it and how to do it and have them involved, I just simply said, here, do it. Continue having the same problem continuously. And they'd be calling saying, Christian, it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And it's like, well, you don't follow the process. And
how'd you correct this over the years?
Over the years, you'll learn that the involvement of the end customer, their level of engagement, their level of commitment to the problem is almost as important as the solution itself. So if damaged merchandise is an issue in the case, but you know what, they've lived with it so long and, oh well, it's just a fact of life, and I don't really go through the process of helping understand what it actually means, then it'll continue to be an issue for as long as they live. The ability for somebody to change their practices or their ways is very, very hard, and you probably know from experience, lots of people will contact you for information and are going to buy expensive projects or products, never get anywhere with it. And in most cases with business as well, you know, you'll go, you help them out, you'll change some things. But unless they're fully engaged, unless there's a real reason why they want and have to do it at a deeper level than just we want to be a little bit better, but there's a real emotional pain, if you want to call it that, then really you're wasting your time. And I learned that when I talked to companies, you know, there had to be real driving reasons. Maybe they wanted to sell the company. They wanted to retire in 3 or 4 years, and they knew that if they didn't get some things in order and followed some better practices, that they were never going to get there. The business was always just going to be worth $40,000, $50,000, or $100,000, or $200,000, which wasn't nowhere near enough what their goals were going to be. Then, you know, you start telling them to do stuff, and you start explaining it better. They're far more engaged in the process.
Mm-hmm. They're on your team.
They're on your team.
So what would you tell my consultants if they're out there, they're cold prospecting, they're talking to businesses, and they're trying to decide, should I take this guy on as a client? What would you tell them?
You need to be able to connect and know what the emotional drivers are with the company you want to work with. What is the real reason why? So if somebody comes up to me and they say, yeah, they want to increase their business or they want to improve what they're doing, then my question is why? And they'll say, oh, because we need more revenue and so on. But there's always another why beneath, and you keep digging till you feel you got the real reason, because at the end of the day, it's just a person.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a person who's got needs and desires. You understand them, and you can connect with them, and you can relate with them, and you feel that you actually can help them achieve those things or solve those things, and you're probably on the right page. But you can't, if you're just not getting it, or if I, in the case of me, if I'm just not feeling that I really understand the real reason why, then it becomes much harder for me to connect and ensure that I'm doing the right thing to help achieve whatever objective that individual person actually has versus what might be the superficial or topical subject that we're addressing.
What were you charging at first? Do you remember?
Try to take whatever my monthly salary would have been and increase it a bit and sell a project, and I would dedicate my time at one client at a time. So $3,000, $4,000 a month was what I was charging a client, and then I'd work 60 hours a week to make sure that I could finish that project within a one-month timeline or whatever.
So you were putting a lot of time into a project.
I was really breaking my back in the process. But it's part of the learning curve. Now, I saw a lot of people get burnt with the Y2 marketing thing. There's a number of people in town here that bought into it and never really made any money. What people, I think, fail to realize is you're going to have to work hard, and you're going to have to go through the paces. I've never met anybody other than a handful of people who got really lucky who haven't made their money by not really working hard, by putting in the time, by learning, by making mistakes, by getting out there and actually doing stuff. And you can't just send out a letter and expect customers to come calling. Use a letter, but it's just one piece of a much larger puzzle. So then I realized after doing some retail work for a while that there's just no money in retail, for one. And two, I was focusing on the wrong kind of stuff. And I had the opportunity to be introduced to a gentleman who was a client of one of the retail stores, a very, very smart man, who owned a human resource company. And at the time, the dot-com thing was beginning to take flight. There was energy happening around that industry. And he said that I should really look into that market. And he was the first person to give me time. And he gave me two pieces of advice. He said, one, make sure you, wherever you spend your time, that you look at your time as how much can you make per hour. Don't think about how much you can make a year, but how much can you make per hour. And if every hour you're making more money, then it's easier to measure where you are versus the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
That was a brilliant piece of advice that, at least for me, worked very well. And the second piece was learn from other people who've been there and done that. You know, don't try to figure it out by yourself. It'll take you too long and too expensive. So take the time, he says. Find people who are in business in town, or wherever you come across that you think is successful, and ask them how they got there. You'll learn tons. Buy tapes, buy whatever the case may be. And he had a small company, still has a small company, continues to be a good friend of mine. But he was a multi-millionaire, and he had built it simply by following very good business practices. He didn't, you know, require to have a 500-person army organization to have the lifestyle he wanted and to have the income he wanted. So I did kind of what you do, perhaps not as sophisticated, for sure not as sophisticated, but I went out and I would find a businessman and I would say, you know, what would it cost to get an hour of your time to learn what you did?
Oh, that's great.
And I started learning huge amounts.
Give me a story, one that's specific of one that sticks out in your mind.
Let's give you an example. I remembered meeting a lady at when I was working for one of these retail stores, an interior design store, doing some work for them.
Mm-hmm.
And a lady walked in, nobody was helping her on the floor. So I went out of the back room, and I didn't know a whole lot about selling for this product company, but, you know, I made sure that she was taken care of. And I said, you know what, you obviously can afford to shop here, so, you know, what is it that you do? And she said, well, my husband owns a couple of businesses. And that's all that registered with me at the time. I said, oh, that's exciting, great. So I called her up, and I said, you know what, you told me once that your husband owns some businesses. Would I be able to get some time off of him? I imagine he's really busy and so on and so forth. And she said, you know what? You know, you treated me really well that time. I'll ask him. And she did. This guy collects Ferraris. He had about 16 Ferraris in this. And I started talking to him. He started explaining how he worked as a banker and a financer and, you know, was making relatively good money, but there was no leverage in it. So he decided to get into his own business. And he got into importing and exporting fruits and vegetables from Italy,
mm-hmm,
to sell to the Italian market and Italian community. And how he had learned that, you know, best way to sell products for this kind of market were through good distribution channels, and how he had set up distribution channels and the importance of distribution channels and why distribution channels don't work and why they do work, and the importance of ensuring that if you make a mistake with a client, that you fix it right away at whatever the cost might have been, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was a fascinating learning on how he'd leverage that, and then once he got the business going, how he'd leave it on autopilot. He'd run it, manage it on autopilot, by ensuring that those processes and systems and policies and procedures that he'd learned from as being an experienced banker like he was, put those protocols in place so that he can go do his next thing. So he had about 7 or 8 companies on the go at the time. I was amazed at how effective he was at running all of them.
Wow.
So that blew me away. I remember my hand had such big cramps after that meeting.
So you were sitting there writing and taking...
Writing, you know, the next thing I did was I said, I got to learn how to speed write or type. So I started taking typing classes and bought myself a little computer to carry around. And then he introduced me to a whole bunch of other power players in the city, a guy that owned a series of hotels, people who owned restaurants, guy that manufactured, one of the first manufacturers for car bras based out of here, Western Canada,
mm-hmm,
people in other cities that I would phone up or find ways to, if I was going to a city, you know, on holidays to meet them, and just taking a ton of notes. And I said, at the same time, anything that I can do for you, tell me. You know, if you need some errands done, if you run out of a guy to stuck for deliveries, you need some guy to do it, you know, whatever it is, I'm not going to charge you. This is, you know, there's some way I have to be able to pay you back. And of course, he insisted that it wasn't necessary. think another thing I learned from people that were fairly wealthy, they're very giving. You know, they're more than happy to share what they've got and from information, but you have to be grateful for it, and they want to feel appreciated for it. Because there's not a lot of things that people can buy for them that they feel a lot of satisfaction for. And for some reason, to this day, I still talk to a lot of business people. They have this sense of satisfaction from being able to share some of their information. And he kept referring me, and everybody I asked, they'd refer me, and people would refer me to two or three people at a time. And of course, after a while, these people become an incredible database of contacts to have. I was religious about networking with people, always sending thank you notes, always being very appreciative again. I was still, quite young at the time.
Yeah, how old were you then?
I would have been about 23 years old, 24 years old.
Okay.
So just learning a huge amount. At the same time, I'd been exposed a little bit to Jay Abraham. Mm-hmm. And I realized, hey, there's some pretty smart people out there that package their information up. So started, I didn't have a lot of money either. Recently married at 24, needed to really make sure that, I spent money wisely. But I started reading this stuff from Jay Abraham and others that I started coming across, and I was like, wow, this is really, really amazing. But then I found out in the process of buying all, stuff and information that, I needed to make it actionable. Mm-hmm. And then I think one thing that I learned for myself was, whenever I read something or I listen to something, even the stuff that I've listened to on your site, I'll sit there and I'll take notes and I'll re-listen to it. But I always try to walk away with one or two bullet points or one or two questions or one or two things that I can put into my, my master process or my master binder, mm-hmm. Of something that I either tweak or improve or try out, mm-hmm. so that I have something to do with it. I've learned that the more you read, the more you listen, the more valuable the knowledge you have. So I try to read a business book a week, maybe every couple of days, but I need to take something out of it that I can actually use and not just being, oh, that was a great book, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that it's actionable and building out. So,
what one or two business books would you recommend that just you think are just awesome?
For somebody who has some consulting experience and is moving forward, Jim Collins' Good to Great,
mm-hmm.
I thought was a very, very strong book from that perspective. I think if you're looking at management and your ability to work with people and manage people and be successful at that, Now Break All the Rules, or First Break All the Rules from the Gallup organization,
mm-hmm.
James Buckingham, was a really, really good one, a good book that I really enjoyed. Michael Gerber's E-Myth. I think people underestimate the value of systematizing things, both for themselves and for clients they're working with or clients that they want to work with. There's one thing to pay lip service to systematization, but the other thing to actually do it and to understand the process that's required to get there is very, very important.
For a year, you had made all these contacts, you had interviewed these people and just trying to learn everything you can. At the same time, were you still doing some of the consulting with the retailers?
Still with retailers and then odds and ends of other shops, but really more on selling. I was trying to focus more on trying to sell products at this point.
Okay.
For them. And basically, I became engaged in the sales process. So I'd go to a company and say, hey, I'll sell for you on commission. What would you pay me if I sold on commission?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll learn your product, I'll learn your stuff, and go out and sell it. So, I'd have three or four companies I'd be trying to sell at the same time. First, it was all over the board, whatever company I thought I'd get a hold of or I found interesting or I thought I could sell. But then I started getting smarter and saying, hey, I'm going to sell products that are similar or in the same vein or same avenue.
Give me an example, one company that you went with to sell.
For example, I was selling an interior designer. I wanted to sell his services a little more.
Uh-huh.
Nice firm, fair size, and I really didn't have an outside sales force. They were really used to getting business by referrals. So I sold for him, but then I'd also go and one of the retail stores I'd done back-end work for, I'd say, hey, I'll sell your furniture outside. I'll sell it to the market in general, try to approach the market in general. And then, a bathroom fixture store. So I'd have a couple of companies in the same avenue and some home renovations type guy or something like that, And then after really investigating and working with these people and learning about, their business, learning about what they had done, something began to strike me fairly strong.
Did you know I do audio interviews? I bet you could tell by now that I do audio interviews with experts on marketing, advertising, direct mail, list management, you name it. My interviews can build the value of your information products. My interviews can enhance the sales of a website. My interviews can make you famous. If you want someone who has an intimate knowledge of the direct mail business and understands the questions to ask, understands how to dig out the scoop, understands how to produce, develop, and create a compelling audio product, you want to talk to me. I promise you, if you've got a product you're selling and you want to bring life and build value into it, please contact me.